stories, teachings, and guidance. Welcome to the Women's Moon Wisdom Podcast with your host, Rebecca Rankin. Welcome back to the Women's Moon Wisdom Podcast. I am so excited for today's discussion, for today's conversation with guest Michelle Lisenberry Christensen. Michelle guides people along the spiritual path of vibrant sexuality and long-term relationships. Her mission is to help build your capacity to create and keep the kind of love and sex you desire so that you can create the world you want to see. Welcome to the show, Michelle.
Hey, so excited to be here. Thank you so much, Rebecca.
Yes. So before we get into like all the good stuff, can you tell us just a little bit about yourself? How did you become interested in being a relationship and sex coach?
Yeah, it is kind of a non-linear funny story. I was a leadership coach from the time I was like 24 years old. I knew very early in life that that's what I wanted to do. And what a blessing that was to have that be basically my first career. I had a job before I transitioned, but I was going along doing that. I earned my master's degree in spiritual psychology with a yoga foundation. And I continued working with leaders. And that turn toward mindfulness took me toward a recognition of the mind, body, spirit aspects of leadership. So I'm going along with that, really helping executives tremendously. And the elements of power, this framework that I think you're going to ask me about later, that articulates how we all have masculine and feminine power in us, and really mastering how to use the right tool for the job, how to stay with ourselves and choose mindfully which qualities we're going to bring forth, made my work with top leaders so effective that they started bringing me home with them. They started saying, like, I know we're supposed to talk about the reorg. Can we talk about my marriage? And I would just be like, well, pinch me every time a client would do that. And it happened more and more often. And I'm pretty good at listening to the little, I call them goddess winks, you know, nudges from life that say, like, this is where you need to head. And it was, even if I weren't good at listening to it, it was so irrefutable. So I added that into my executive coaching work. And then I had a daughter. And as soon as I gave birth to her and brought her home, almost exactly 12 years ago, I could not get it up anymore to suit up and go to a corporate campus. And that's when I started tapering down leadership work entirely. So I do still work with leaders, but only those who seek me, you know, and seldom is it like the company pays for it and they come to me, because I integrate love, sex, and power into what I do. And I've definitely had occasions when people are like, we saw your website, we won't be working with you. You know, like, heaven forbid you awaken our aliveness. Like, okay, enjoy your sleep.
Oh, so you've like found, I mean, you found your calling. This is like, it's clearly been laid out for you and you've just like taken it and run with it. Oh, beautiful. Well, thank you.
Not without resistance, you know? So that's the other thing I would share is that, like, I know that for a lot of women, where they are in their relationships, they're hungry for more, but there's so much taboo of like, I want more sex. Like, that's a pretty bold thing for a woman to say, even today, even, you know, because if you're a nice girl, if you're a wholesome lady, and I am, you know, I'm next door and I'm your kid's friend's mom at school. And I don't want people to think of me as like tawdry or seductive. And those are the negative associations with sex. So I can relate, you know, so you say like you ran with it. I did and I didn't. It's always been a little bit like, I know this matters and please don't hate me for bringing it up. You know, so I've had to work through a lot of being willing to show up with it and let people have their reactions. And I've learned that it's a blessing. If I push your buttons around sexuality, around relating differently, around speaking truth to power with your husband, maybe that's my service, but it is a little bit of, you know, it's a little bit of heartache for me sometimes because people don't, you know, react in a lot of different ways to that.
Yeah. Well, let's go into that a little bit, because I feel like that because you've had this like embodied experience of it, like you can then help women who are like wanting that, like who are wanting more out of life. Like how do you, where do we even begin with that? Like, let's dive in.
Well, I think, so, you know, the voice inside, and Rebecca, people who listen to you regularly, I'm sure you're guiding them back, and your physical voice is such a soothing amplification of the inner voice in me. When I hear you speak, my wise woman is like, has a megaphone, you know, through you. So recognizing that the voice of my desire, the voice of my knowing, the voice of my inner wisdom is a quiet voice. It's one that requires space and permission. And I have to like build a fence around her, protect her so that I can hear it. And the voices of other people's opinions, the voice of the dude in high school who said I wasn't pretty enough, and the girl that stole my boyfriend, and the guy that when I said no and we were both drunk, wouldn't really listen to that. And I don't really know where that was legally, you know, but it hurt and made me feel badly about myself, like I should have done something different there. All of those voices are loud. Those ones, you could listen to those for a lifetime and never would the quiet voice come up unless you protected her. Right?
Oh my gosh, I'm like getting tears in my eyes. Yes. Like you're speaking to all of us.
That's our story, right?
Yeah. That is. Oh my gosh, I'm like literally, this is going to be a good conversation. And like, in before we started to our conversation, before we started the show, you'd mentioned about this idea of lukewarm love versus legacy love. Can you dive in a little bit more with that? So let's see, we're women who like we want more. And a lot of us were, you know, we're in 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, like a lot of us have been in long-term relationships, right?
We're moms, like, right?
Yeah, we're moms.
You're married to a dude, great guy. You have his babies. For some reason, my camera is doing fireworks.
I just saw that too. So for the guys who are listening, we're recording this on Zoom, and they were literally, when she said that, just fireworks went around her.
My hand gestures created
it was amazing.
Psychic phenomenon. We're moving some energy, Rebecca. Let's do
totally
this.
Are. This is a powerful conversation already.
So, you know, you've got the stability, right? You've built the life that from the road looks amazing. And on so many levels, to your cozy self, to your sense of security, to the part of you that always wanted to be a mom or discovered after you had a baby, even though you'd been ambivalent until then. Like, yes, I love doing this. I want these things. And I sure don't want to like blow this up. But always when I make the space for it, when I'm not moving too fast, when I'm not a little hopped up on caffeine or sugar or red wine, I hear it. I hear the yearning. There's more for you. And it's disturbing, right? If you hold it as a dichotomy, I can either have the life I have or I can have full aliveness. This is comfortable. It's lukewarm. It's pleasant. And I'm hungry. I want to feel electric. I want to lick the knife blade sometimes, but I'm afraid that it will destroy all that is precious to me in my here and now. Yes. And I think that's women's journey with wanting more sexually, because we have an edict against telling a man, I want you to touch me. And the way you have been coming toward me, the energy or the technique or the way that you ask or the way you related to me on Tuesday in the morning when we were both so busy, makes my body curl up and pull away from you. How do you say that to a guy?
Yeah. How?
You're like, answer that question.
I'm like, no, but it's true. We all experience that. It's like, and then you have this like guilt of like, oh, but I have everything I want. I'm like, I have this great relationship. Like
what kind of woman would complain about this?
Exactly. Like, why can't I just be happy with what I have?
Why can't I just be happy with what I have? And we ask that rhetorically, right?
Yes.
So I want to amplify the voice in you that answers that question. I cannot be fully self-expressed. I cannot be fully claiming to live the purpose I was sent here to live if I'm not fully alive. I am a change agent. I am not a maintainer of the status quo. I am not actually, all apologies, not a good girl. I am not someone who's going to perpetuate what I was handed because I think there's something that would work better. I feel it in my bones that there's more possible for me. And I know that if I take the risk to find the skills, to find the outside voices that will amplify my knowing and to practice becoming the kind of woman I frankly have not seen very much around me, then we can build the new world that I envision. My children can have the kinds of relationships that I don't see around me, and it can be commonplace. The wealth that I want women to command, because I know we'll use it well, will be commonplace. And that will only come if I will lovingly, gently, with compassion and persistence, dismantle the structures right here at home. You know, I joke, like, regime change begins at home. You know, if right here in our house, we can get out of bed with, and, you know, I'm not like a bra burner, but, you know, patriarchy is one of the provocative words I wind up using, and, you know, people have reactions to it. But what I mean by patriarchy is that structure where we've decided that things are a certain way between men. Men are like this, women are like that. Are we sure? And could this woman and this man be something greater? So that's what we've worked on at our house for 27 years now. And I mean, mugwump is a word that's part of my husband's vocabulary, you know, like he was whatever you've got at home. My guy was like that, you know, drank a lot. He used pornography a lot. He lied in ways I didn't know about for decades. He hid from me. He didn't want to connect. And then he did, and he wanted things in a certain way. And I said no when I meant yes. And I said yes when I meant no. And it was messy. And we've been just working with it. I want to say we figured it out, but it's really good now. And we keep working on it. So there are ways, but it takes tremendous courage. It is. I won't deny that it's a risk. And that for some people, it's not. They choose that it's not worth it. And that's okay. Mm-hmm. But I'm here to support those who say, no, I get it. And I get that it's of service to him too. This is not a criticism of him. It's an offering of the goddess that I know that I am. I'm going to show up like her instead of the, you know, his mom.
Mm-hmm. And that's like, even that, you know, you touched on just like the, like, patriarchy doesn't work for either women or men. Like, it's a disservice to both, you know, that's like, right. It's like men are put in their little box and not imprisoned, being able to express themselves in their fullest, as well as us. Like, as women, we're not fully able to be fully alive and fully express ourselves while fitting in this little box that we've inherited.
Exactly. And that's why I call it, what we create is legacy love. We take what we inherited, we name it, we pinpoint where, what was I taught? Where did I learn what a good woman is? What women are supposed to do? Where did I learn how a man is supposed to be? You know, and some women have learned, you know, we've got messages inside us. When we start to decode this, clients share with me, you know, I realize I want him to express himself, but I was also taught, like, it's spooky when a guy's vulnerable, because who's going to take care of you if he's not like Man of Steel? Well, of course, but we also know, like Brené Brown teaches, like, my vulnerability is my strength. That underlies it. And then in the 12 Elements of Power, we talk about fierceness and resilience. Your fierceness can only be so effective if your resilience isn't also a pretty cut muscle. You know, if you can be powerful even when you're bleeding and hurting. And don't women know that, right? Doesn't our DNA tell us about how to be powerful when you've been beaten again and the laws don't protect you from that? You know, our grandmothers know from resilience.
I mean, even that, like, it's innately within us, like our cyclical nature. Like, we know life and death within each month, right? We know this aspect of ourselves that is of celebration and of grief, right? Of birth and death, cyclically. And that is like a powerful element of our, you know, our of being a woman. And men maybe not necessarily know that. And so I feel like they have to, they maybe act out in ways because they're not feeling the same, or they've been told they can't feel emotions. They told that they have to be the strong ones. And there's this lack of being able to even access that part of them that is vulnerable. And when they do, it's scary because they've been told, well, boys don't cry.
It's forbidden. It's
yeah.
forbidden. And yeah, there's a point that people often tell me is helpful to understand. It's not just that they've been told, right? It's not just the messages. It's that what my clients tell me is that they carry with them to this day kind of a checklist in the back of their heads. One concrete example is like a boy can't take his notebook and carry it across his chest. He can't fold his arms across his chest and carry his books like this because that's girly. That's feminine. A boy holds his books at the end of his arm down inside his wrist. You have to constantly signal, I'm aware that white men are at the top of the pyramid and I have the privilege I have. You know, some boys or men already know they're not white or they're not straight, which knocks you down from the top of the pyramid, but you protect as much privilege as you can and you try to use it for good. You know, good guys do that, but you don't like open yourself up to attack. And so if in middle school it was don't hold your books against your chest, don't run with your arms straight behind you, you know, there were things you had to do to show I'm a man. And today, even in the privacy of your own home, that vulnerability, John Gottman identifies one of the core things that predicts success for a relationship is accepting influence from your partner. But that's one of the core things that predicts failure inside that male pecking order of patriarchy. We were in London once and buying tickets like night of to see Cirque du Soleil at Royal Albert Hall. And there are scalpers out front. And we're thinking about, do we go in the box office or do we talk this? We're talking to a scalper. He's got two tickets in separate sections. And my husband was talking to him. And I looked at the two tickets and went, these are in separate sections. Let's go into the box office. I turned around and started walking. Kurt started to follow me. And the guy says to him, oh, scrub of floors too, do you, mate?
Wow.
Like, unpack that.
Mm-hmm.
That's the like guy code in action. He lost status with a brother
mm-hmm.
by taking influence from a woman. And the guy tried to make the sale by attacking him at that level. If
yeah.
you were a real man, you would tell her, get back here, woman. We're buying these from this guy.
Yes.
So that's, you know, that's sort of an extreme example of a guy calling calling a guy back to the herd. Like, this is how we roll.
Yeah.
But I think that's in the back of a lot of men's minds. So as women are trying to cultivate something that is more an expression of like, I'm fully in my masculine and feminine power, and you can be fully in your masculine and feminine power, and they complement each other. They make us stronger and bigger. A guy's like, sure, but I have to compromise some privilege to even have this conversation with you.
Yeah.
And so he has to cultivate the courage to do that. And how women can help their men do that is by modeling it. You demonstrate your own courage for as long as you have to. You stay loving and clear, and you start living from your aliveness. You become your own best lover. And then he sees that you are juicy and turned on and that it's not coming from him, and he gets curious.
Yeah. And would you say that's like coming full circle back to this thought of like, when we want more, like it's coming from within, like you have to like kind of rediscover that part of you within to even.
To like, the extent that you feel like there's something that would be hard to bring about, to the extent that you feel like, ooh, I would need him to dot, dot, dot. Whatever extent you feel that, bring that back and say, huh, what if I'm not aware of the extent to which I'm a creator here? I have creative power. Oops, one of us is carrying a womb. Might be the creative power here.
Yes.
You know, like if we can let ourselves be leaders and not think that that means he's a dipshit and not think that that means we're a controlling bitch, but actually say, oh, I was gifted with this vision. Mm-hmm. I was blessed to be the one who gets to know this first and to find the skill in myself to get to become somebody who's capable of transmitting that,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I've been there in the self-pity of like, God, I said to a therapist once, why do I always bring the agenda? How come he never has a list of things he wants to work on? And I always do. And she said, Michelle, what if it's always going to be like that? It just stopped me in my tracks. But when I grieved that I hadn't married myself, you know, when I worked through like what a nightmare that would be, I went, oh, okay. So on this front, I'm the leader. Of course he leads on lots of other fronts.
Yeah.
And I don't mind that. So mm-hmm. I can take this. Yeah. So we let ourselves lead and we come back to us in the ways, you know, and like we work with people like Rebecca and let her teach us the wisdom that lives in our bodies, in our cycles, in our connection to this earth and her cycles. And as we lean back into that wisdom, we're not only full, but then magnetic.
Yeah. And I love that, like, in a way it's like simple, like it's okay to be the leader of it. It's okay, like, to be the one, you know, in your sex life, to be the one who is leading the charge.
Yeah. And I'm not saying you have to initiate all the time. What right. I mean is you're the one leading the charge in bringing about a different erotic culture. You're the one expanding our vision about sex. It's not, you know, we aren't going to define sex anymore as starting the moment there's insertion and ending the moment you ejaculate and roll over and fall asleep. Mm-hmm. Sex to us now is shared erotic energy. So it can happen in the kitchen in front of the kids and the surreptitious, mm-hmm. and it can definitely happen with full nudity and whatever we want, but we're going to create a more juicy environment here. And not just for the sake of gratification on that physical level, but for the sake of us finding new parts of me and new parts of you and new parts of the connection. That's the point of our sex. And for it to give us energy to do all the other things we're up to, mm-hmm. you know, a whole new definition. And we can lead on that. And then, yeah, he'll initiate. Yeah, we'll get to feel that. And yes. Women tell me like, I wish he would just like take me by the wrist. You know, mm-hmm. I want him to kiss me up against the wall. Women who are like powerful, you know, who are activating a lot of masculine energy, a lot of doing out in the world.
Yes.
We do want to lie back, right? But how do you make somebody dominate you in a loving, you know, consensual way? Well, you start by leading the culture.
And this idea that I'd love for you to expand kind of along these lines of, you'd mentioned prior to us recording the concept of erotic intelligence and how, like, there's a lot of misconceptions about what sex looks like in your 30s, 40s, 50s as we get older. Let's, like, can we start to migrate that way a little bit? Like, absolutely. What is erotic intelligence?
Yeah. So I think of that as like, I mean, I think Daniel Goleman popularized the notion of emotional intelligence, right? So before we, and I think it was Howard Gardner that talked about like multiple intelligences, maybe the 80s. So, but before that, we thought of it like as mental firepower, you know, how well does the computer in your head work? But we know that there's like spatial intelligence and there's all kinds of flavors. So what is this one? Erotic intelligence isn't like, you know, how's your BJ technique or like,
right.
It is part technique. What's it like to be seen and touched by you? What kind of attention and presence do you bring? Erotic intelligence comprises, so that's the skill circle. Erotic intelligence also includes your own sense of yourself. What kind of person do you bring? What kind of energy do you bring? And how facile are you at choosing different flavors of energy?
Mm-hmm.
You know, to meet your partner, but also to express and explore yourself. So the vulnerability to go into the unknown is a facet of it. erotic intelligence also definitely includes the here and now relationship with the body you have. So my 18-year-old body, pre-kids, pre-mortgage, this is my person, responded very differently than my 50-year-old body does, turns out. And rather than thinking like, we got to get it back, you know, that's not erotic intelligence. Erotic intelligence says, oh, what's here now? What is desired? What's my no now? What doesn't feel good? And if we can cultivate from my body as it is today and the other person's body as it is today, that can keep getting better through the years. So a lot of clients come to me like postpartum and, you know, like their tissue is resisting interaction. You know, there's a lot of pain sometimes. And they're like, when am I going to get it back? And hormones have a lot to do with that. If you're still breastfeeding, you may continue to have problems. But, you know, there are a lot of erogenous zones on every body that aren't inside the vagina where that pain is. So you can play in lots of different ways, but especially in that place and again in other places. I think a lot of women think in terms of like, he has a need, I'm supposed to meet it, but frankly, I feel violated. And yeah, if you're doing things that your body has a solid no to, that is kind of rapey. It's non-consensual on your body's part, even if you go, okay, I know he needs it, I'm doing this out of generosity. But what we could do more generously is inquire as to what's wanted here. You know, what is it that he's hungry for? My attention, my care. It might be gratification, which is legitimate, you know, so, but it could be like lying with him while he self-pleasures and stroking his chest, half asleep, you know, because you're not sleeping. You know, there's lots of other like roads to Rome. And same if, you know, there are chapters in a lot of men's life where there's, you know, I hate the clinical terms like erectile dysfunction, but your penis is responding differently than you're used to, or ejaculation might be sooner or take longer. Maybe medication is interacting with that. And if we define sex performatively, you know, you're supposed to get it up, keep it up for the right amount of time, not too short, not too long, and then be able to ejaculate, then there's so many ways to lose. But if instead we think about it as being sensational, then we can play together and there's never shame. There's never cause for embarrassment or a feeling of failure. It's all just the experience. And where I teach men to get to is where they disconnect ejaculation from orgasm so that they can be multiple orgasmic people. And so that sex doesn't have to end because their penis popped off and it's all over and they lost their erection. So it's the capacity for longer penetration is what lets women get to deeper and deeper levels of the internal vaginal and energetic orgasms that really, I think, open the doorway to the goddess. If I can, you know, we just want to go all the way there.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely.
That's where it becomes sacred. So to me, all of that is erotic intelligence. And it starts with redefining what we think of, what we think sex is and what we think it's for.
Yes. And it's such a great reminder for all of us that it is going to look different and feel different than when we're in our 20s, when we're like, you know, with different partners, and that it can evolve and it is sacred, right? It can be this sacred experience, which is, at least for me, a lot different than my, you know, how I viewed sex in my 20s was not a sacred experience. It was a fun time.
and I mean, what were you getting out of it? Like what purpose did it serve in your 20s?
Right. Joy, pleasure, like fun. Yeah. You know?
And for me, it was like my ego loved the attention.
Yes.
It validated me. It told me I was valuable. And yeah, to feel like, oh, that's lost is sad. But what do I know today about my value? Where does my value come from now?
Yeah.
And, you know, so we can like love that person for all the fun she had in the way that she did, but not feel like she's the pinnacle. But, you know, back to the culture and like kind of rewriting our stories. Oh, wait, if I haven't examined like the ageism, you know, the notion that a woman is truly at her best when she's about 18, then then I will always be like hearkening for that or grieving that I have wrinkles, that the skin on my stomach is never going to be the same after three pregnancies. But instead, if I see like, oh, you want to see this? Look what I got. Do you know what I made? You know, then we can marvel at our bodies. And, you know, I learned a long time ago that men don't care, you know, or lovers, whatever gender your lover is.
Yeah.
If I get to be naked with you and touching you, I'm in awe. Like, oh my God, the energy, you know, it's this person and every square inch of them is exquisite. Even if that's dimpled or you missed a spot shaving or you don't shave or whatever, it's delicious.
Oh, and to like, I think back of like, think back to my 20-year-old self, and it's like, oh, wait till she know, like, understands that, right? I look back and be like, she did not like it. And like you said, it was, at least for me, my experience was like this ego driven, like, you know, I'm in my 20s, men find me extremely attractive, and that is my power. And, you know, like, I loved that aspect of, you know, of play and pleasure. And it's been this reminder as I've gotten older and had kids, and I've been in, you know, married for, I don't even know how long we've been married, over a decade. But like, it's just this nice reminder to be like, oh, but I still have that power. And it's not from anyone else other than within me.
Right.
And it is still there. And I have gray hairs and I have smile lines and I've got dimpled skin and I'm still me, you know, still.
I mean, those are accoutrements. Those are not like dings you should go to the body shop and get fixed up. Those are like new features, you know, like my face is getting way more interesting and my hair has these magical silver highlights and I love it. Yeah. Yes. I'm getting hotter by the year.
Yes.
But we need to create a culture where we mirror that for each other.
Yes.
Instead of being like, oh, but you're still pretty.
Oh, many people will tell me, like, and maybe you've experienced this, it's like, oh my gosh, you look way, like, what's the phrase? Like, oh, you look way younger than that. I would have never have guessed you're that old. And I'm like, I mean, I'm in my 40s, I'm not that old, but like, what am I supposed to look like? Oh, you look, never have guessed you're that old.
You look great.
Yeah, you look great. That's the term. Oh, you look great for 40 or whatever age. Like,
thank you. I think.
Thanks, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Right. So that's, we can, with ourselves and with other women, we can create a culture. We go, you look amazing.
Yeah.
You are amazing. And that power you wielded in your 20s, and that I did too, when I wanted to be monogamous, when I wanted to not be the party girl and not get turned by male attention, I turned my light off. I made sure that power wasn't evident, that I wasn't going to attract that attention because I didn't trust myself not to misuse it or not to be swayed by somebody who wanted me to do something that would hurt my husband. So I had to learn to turn it back on. You know, I did that work to be like, oh yeah, I get to choose and I can be reliable. I can be hot. People can want me. And I don't have to do anything that violates my commitments.
Yes.
So that's a good passage to make. But then also, yeah, like what good is that power if you're not seeking new sexual attention? Well, I think we find that we're the hearth in our home, that your turn on and delight in yourself is the source of light and heat and power for your whole family. You know, men say happy wife, happy life. And there's that saying like, ain't mama happy, ain't nobody happy. Mm-hmm. And it's true. And when we say happy, it's not like, just like, don't piss her off, right? It's like, really, how happy are you? Are you, I call it tending the flame. Are you tending your flame? How turned on are you? When was your last orgasm? Was it the same as always? Did you just like rub one out as quickly as you could? Or are you giving yourself the tender care that you would give a visiting priestess who was just there for the weekend?
Yes. Oh, so good.
This is how we light up the world.
Yeah. Absolutely. I love like tending to your own flame. It's you like stoking your fire. It's like the tapas, right? In yogic philosophy. It's like your inner flame. It's the...
Well, but also tapas is the discipline.
Yes.
Right. It's the fire that we're referring to when we say like feet to the fire. It's yeah. like, stay here, even though the temperature is rising and you're a little uncomfortable. And for sure, you know, when I give clients pleasure homework, I want you to spend a full hour just exploring your body. Put on music, light candles, pretend a lover is coming because she is, and then just play. You know, and I've been there to like 5 minutes in. Oh, wait, you know, we remember something we've got to go do.
Yes.
It's really tapas.
Yes, it's the discipline
yeah.
to be there, even mm-hmm. when it's, you know, starting to reach your comfort, discomfort level.
Yeah, well, the edge of your capacity. Rebecca yes. was making this motion with her hands that I could see on video. Yeah, like a little ball that's, or a balloon that's kind of blowing up. And right when you blow up a balloon, it starts to get stretchy and it feels uncomfortable. But that's a good sign. It shows you're growing your capacity. You're not doing what you already have the capacity to do. You're building new capacity. And I think that's really at the heart of this work, is growing capacities that we were taught not to grow. You know, women have been told through time, like, you have to wear skirts and high heels. Those really slow a person down, right? In physically moving through the world. But there's also just been so much distraction that we've been assigned. I'm leading a call later today about Mary Magdalene. And, oh. you know, like the Pope established a feast day for her 8 years ago. Just 8 years ago, she was acknowledged as one of the saints. But she was basically Jesus's co-teacher, you know, his partner, possibly in life. We don't even have to speculate about that to recognize her primacy as a leader. And it served the empire to set her aside and vaunt him up and present him as celibate and solitary. But if we reclaim, you know, the documented history, I don't even have to go into like speculation to say, like, you know, she was his favorite and she saw him and she stayed with him when other people didn't. So if we just call upon that guidance and we know what we know, then we could fix what's gone sideways over the last 2000 years just by how we live our lives. How would you have lived your life if you grew up in a 2000 year old lineage that said man and woman, intimacy, partnership, seeing one another, sharing the same breath, that is the essence of spiritual practice. That is the essence of growth. How would it be different? Let's find out.
Yeah. So, so true. Oh my gosh. I'm like, I want to be on that call. Oh, and we started to go in this direction and then we kind of weaved away, and I want to kind of bring it back to kind of this idea that within all of us, we all have this masculine and feminine aspect within us. And I know we're talking very much in like a heterosexual, you know, kind of
yeah,
language.
Most of my clients are heterosexual, but I always, it's really important to me to be inclusive.
Yes.
And
yes.
I work with people, and I also usually work with monogamous people, but I also work with polyamorous people. And I think we were built in many different ways,
yes.
all of them beautiful.
Yeah. And it's, I won't, like, everyone gets a seat at the table here today. But let's talk a little bit, just like this idea of, you know, having this masculine and feminine power within us. Can you just expand on that a little bit if anyone is like not familiar with this concept, and like what that looks like as an expressed version, an embodied version of yourself?
Yeah. So, we, in our view of human capacities, my mentor Terry Real calls this psychological patriarchy, where we sort of divide the qualities that all humans have into two groups, and we go, this is masculine and this is feminine. Or and that's really where you say, this is how boys are, or these are male traits and these are female traits. And then we take the two columns and we invert it and we turn it 90 degrees and go, these ones are more valuable, these ones are less valuable.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got that overlay, but really go back further than that. And the, you know, in Eastern traditions, there's a big recognition of yin and yang. So if you can picture that symbol that, you know, people sometimes call it yin yang, but there's, you know, there's a black kind of, what are those called? Paisley interlocking with a white one. And there's a dot of the other color in the center of each. And Jung talked about this, the anima inside the male and the animus inside the female. Like, we have an inner masculine in us as women, and it's crucial to fully express ourselves, and same with men. So I have a framework called the 12 elements of power, and it's really, you don't have to put masculine and feminine on it, but it is describing your yin and your yang. And one of them, you know, the yang is more your outward capacities, the ways you make things happen. And inward, the yin side, is more about how you allow, how you receive, and how you source, you know, how you recharge, or how you set the foundation, how you create the experience. And so it's like right foot, left foot. If you're hopping on one foot, you're only going to get so far, and you're going to get really tired, and your body's alignment is going to get out of whack. But if you can go left foot, right foot, you can start to run eventually, right? If you can fluidly use the one that it's time to use, everything works beautifully. And so what's cool about this model, and your listeners can download one, and we'll share the link. When you learn this language, you learn these just 12 things. It's like a figure ground shift. Like when I took physics in high school, I started to see everything. I was like, dude, it's everywhere. It's a vector, you know, like you just, the world changes because you, oh, she's in distorted resilience, right? She's being like a really brave little tiger, and she's worn out, and she's kind of resentful, right? So it's great to be able to roll with the punches and not get quite as much sleep as you need. And, you know, or like, okay, I was going to go do this, but you need me to do that. You go do that. That's resilience. Awesome. But if you do too much of it, you go into distorted resilience, and you need to call up some fierceness so that the immediate solution is just, you go to the other one. So fierceness sounds like a tiger with their claws out and their teeth showing, but fierceness is simply like having boundaries. You know, clean fierceness is like, oh, let me think about, no, that doesn't fit into my day. I could do that for you next week, possibly, or just like, oh no, that's not a match for me. You know, somebody else, that must be for somebody else to do. So there's 12 elements. So should we talk about the different pairs?
Please. Okay. I would love to.
Okay, great. So it starts with how we establish our identity. Connection is a more yin way. You know, I know who I am because I'm Pat and Harry's daughter. I'm Kurt's wife. I'm Mira and Cooper's mom, right? I'm Rebecca's friend. So this is where we cultivate relationships, and we're connected to our body, to the earth, to our emotions, to the divine, right? That's connection. Self-reliance is, I know who I am because I'm independent. I'm focused. I can make things happen. I can take risks, and I can create control. So that's self-reliance. And so to get things done, you need to be able to step out and do things on your own, and you need to be able to connect with other people and to know who you are. It's both. So then how do we set priorities? That's sensuality and pragmatism are the feminine and masculine counterparts. Does it work? Does it run on time? Does it function? Does it do what it was supposed to do? And then what's it feel like? Does it feel good? Does it smell good? Does it, is the process yummy for the people involved? And then how we get what we want, this pair is like receiving and driving. So I make things happen. I go for what I want. I acquire, I direct, I penetrate. I see what I want and I take it. That's driving. Receiving is, once I have it, do I let myself enjoy it? Mm-hmm. Or if somebody else tries to help me get there, do I let them? Do I listen for information? This is where intuition lives, making requests and then feeling gratitude, right? So no matter how much you achieve with your driving, if you don't have the capacity to feel gratitude about it, it will never, ever be enough. Mm-hmm. Right? So we need both. And then the fourth pair is how we relate to ourselves and others. So providing is when I hear what you need and I give it to you. I protect or rescue, I fix, I can pay for things, I can take action. And this is where sometimes when we read the news and we hear about people hurting, we feel powerless because we can't provide a solution to the biggest problems in the world. But we have another power, and that's nurturing. So this is where we care. Just holding it. I hear you. I hear what's happening there. And I send my love and I envision how I hope it can be one day there. And I feel the pain with the people who are there now. This is where we tend. This is where we heal. We empathize. And that has power, you know, so we're affirming, no, that actually matters. My yes. prayers, my intentions, my care do something. Mm-hmm. And Larry Dossey has done a lot of research on this. People are prayed for. People who are prayed for get better, even if the faith doesn't align or any of that. It's just like, it just, it does work. It does mm-hmm. do things. But in the like linear thought processes, only providing matters. So then there's how we handle challenges. And I've alluded to these. Fierceness, do we do something about it? We defend, we speak out, we fight, we analyze, we plan an approach, we launch a campaign. And resilience is where we slow down. We allow something to pass through. We reflect on it. We bend with what's happening. We're candid. We name what's so, even if we don't have like a solution in mind. We feel pain and we hold steady. And as I mentioned, our mother line has taught us a lot about this. I think of all the women who have been enslaved, who have been legally disenfranchised. It's been only a century that in this country, women have had a vote. So resilience is our birthright. And then finally, the last pair is how we think. Focus is the bottom line, thinking with laser sharpness, you know, being articulate, seeing the holes in things and analyzing them. And being able to think in literal senses. Holism is the other side, being able to think metaphorically, finding the wholes and being able to multitask. This is the more permeable corpus callosum in the female brain. So there are gender differences, even though everybody has access to all these things. So this is the model that I've taken to executive teams, presented at the Microsoft Women's Conference, you know, that lots of corporations have been like, okay, yeah, this unlocks the latent potential inside our organization because we are lopsided and it shows with burnout and turnover and infighting and people who are the best at getting results being the same people who leave the most dead bodies. So integrating masculine and feminine power isn't just like groovy. It reveals the blind spots that are tripping people up.
Yeah. That's so powerful. I mean, it really is. I got full body chills when you're saying all of them. I'm like, yeah, you can see how culturally a lot of those more feminine aspects have not looked at with like the same value, the same weight as some of these more masculine traits.
Yeah, and they're liabilities or they're luxuries.
Yes, yes.
If you're like that, it's okay, but hide it. Yeah. Or you can do that once you've crossed the finish line.
Yes. Once you've done these things, then you can do... Then you can treat yourself to
those cute things. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But what if instead we hold them as superpowers?
Yeah.
And nobody's going to do that for us. We have to claim it.
Yeah. And I love that. Like it really, it does come back to like back home to like what's within, like the, you know, our relationship to ourself, our, you know, our own capacity for self-compassion or capacity to understand ourselves, like to give ourselves grace. And to feel just more empowered, you know?
And then go unapologetically use the power in the interpersonal ways. You know, say no when we mean no. Really look at when other people are asking for our time and energy, knowing that nobody's entitled to it, that we were up to something. Thank you.
Yeah.
Even though we work from home, say.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean I have all day to do laundry, actually.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. This is... such a great conversation. And kind of as we wrap things up here, I would love to just like, where do I even begin? I'd love for you to just share like any like little bit of advice that you want to give women who are on a journey of self-discovery or empowerment in the relationship within themselves, in their sexuality. Just last parting thoughts.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I will say that I think that like the deepest, you know, this is the least tactical thing I could say, And I'll think of a tactical one too to go with it. Of course, pair them. So the least tactical, most like the deepest root is know what you know. Cultivate your knowing. Make room for that through pleasure practice, sitting still, silent meditation, which can be very masculine. And so if that doesn't work for you, that's fine. Do it through movement. But find the access to your knowing and amplify that. Know that it's like if there was a sacred text buried in your backyard, you ought to go dig that up, right? It's obviously meant for you. And you have sacred text buried inside you. So find it and read it and memorize it and live it. And know that just because it's quiet and only you hear it doesn't mean it's not valuable. That's the thing you're supposed to bring forward. And so, you know, there's a sex that you dream of that you've never had. Bring that forward. Tend to that. There's a no that you want to say and you feel badly about it. Just trust that you want it. Trust your wanting. Your desires are marching orders written on your heart by the divine. They're what you're here to do. So, and you're going to have to walk through a lot of conditioning, a lot of, you know, like guilt. I shouldn't, that's going to cause this and that and the other disruption. I know, I hear you. And I've had to do it too. It's painful, but this is the work. So that's the deepest piece. And then I think the top level thing is do what you can to something like you can become hybrid. I want you to switch to being fueled by pleasure, but I know you're fueled by other things right now. So just see if you can supplement, like get pleasure every day and, you know, preferably ecstatic orgasmic pleasure. And if you will go on a little bit more of an orgasm diet, things will start to shift. Your courage, the volume at which you hear that inner voice turns up. I've seen it happen over and over.
I love that. Go on the orgasm diet. That's so good.
Yeah, you know, diet means lifestyle. So yes. Just like and I personally have lost 90 pounds and kept it off. So I do know that like our relationship with our bodies, and I'm not vaunting being thin. I'm just saying that it's you know, if we're always trying to manage all that discomfort of pushing down that voice, we will have to use things like food and alcohol and the internet and everything to keep it at bay. But if we actually turn to pleasure and listening to ourselves, everything gets more balanced.
That's so good. Like, it just reminds me of like when the first things you said about was like that your inner voice that's in you that you had to put this fence around to protect so that it could be heard. Oh, like know that, get to know her, listen to her. Oh, thank you so much. How can our community here connect with you and find more about you?
Yeah, my website is at lisenberry.com, lisenbury. That's not the easiest. we're thinking about changing that, but that's the one I know. And you can find all my social handles there. And some of the places that people start are with my podcast, Sex, Love, Power. It's available everywhere you can hear podcasts. And I've done a lot of solo episodes just sharing like, here's how you do it. Or here's what I want you to know about, you know, if you have a vision, you're the visionary. I go way into that in an episode. And that's something people say is helpful to have as their companion. And then the 12 Moments of Power, we'll get Rebecca and our team a link so that you can download that and have the printed one page reference. And when you learn that language, it will change everything.
Thank you so much. Yes, we'll have all those in the show notes. Thank you. Thank you so much, Michelle, for being here, sharing just your energy, your wisdom with all of us. It's been such a true pleasure. And I don't know if I've had so many like yes bumps in an interview as I did today. Oh, it was so good.
My body's always doing that. I'm not surprised. And I'm so delighted. You are sheer magic. Your voice just wraps around me like a sacred cloak, and your presence, the way that you live with the cycles and with your deep wisdom and listening to her, is so evident and so contagious. And your listeners are so blessed. I'm so blessed to get to be with you today. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.